B-Pod Studios.
This is the real Ring of Honor World Champion, Matt Taven.
This is Eddie Edwards.
Hey, it's me, the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart.
Tis your great leader, Broken Matt Hardy.
This is Ilya Markopoulos.
Hello, I am Elias, and you're listening to Inside the Ropes with Sarge and Jay Stu.
When I'm in Boston, man, I listen to Inside the Ropes. It's unbelievable, baby!
And listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes. Why? Because I'm Matt Taven, and I told you so!
And you are listening to Inside the Ropes with Jay Stu and Sarge, where anything is possible. Go Celtics!
And you're listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with Jay Stu and Sarge. Go Pats!
Let's get into it and listen to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast!
Each week you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike, I only have hearing in one ear. It's my right ear. My voice is dying, but Chicago was amazing. And I have to thank everybody in All Elite Wrestling who were super nice and accommodating to me and to Conrad Thompson and his staff at StarCast, who were fabulous in their treatment of me all weekend as well. We're here to recap the pay-per-view that happened on Saturday night. And my general opening thought is, it was a really good show, but man, do I have a lot of work to do to familiarize myself with the roster. Mike, what's your general opening thought as you watched the show?
Well, you know, Jimmy, as we have talked about before, the Double or Nothing pay-per-view was really good one. In fact, it's definitely up for consideration for pay-per-view of the year, I believe, in the pro wrestling world when 2019 is all said and done. So that one really set the tone for me for the expectations of AEW here. And from what we had over the summer with the two other ones, the smaller ones, I thought that they did the best they could. And this is the one here that we had mentioned, especially as of late, that they'd pull out all the stops with All Out. And here we are a year later from All In. So I tried not to have the high expectations that I would, that I really thought I, you know, would have to have here to live up to the Double or Nothing. So I thought overall it was a good pay-per-view. It was a good show. I don't think it was as good as Double or Nothing, but there's still a lot of things to, you know, kind of get used to here. With AEW, especially the roster, as you mentioned, and also to kind of figure out the storylines, where they're going here on out. I mean, it was only 10 days ago, 10 days before the match, Jon Moxley had to pull out against Kenny Omega. So now you have Pac in there, Pac, whatever, Neville, the former Neville, going up against, it was actually a pretty good match with Omega, and that just changes a lot of things right there. A friend of mine texted me, Jimmy, and I'm going to read you what he said to me, and I want you to let me know what you think about this. And he said that his AEW fear, the fear for him, is that there are not a lot of main eventers. He thinks there's a giant gap from main event talent to mid-card, and the main event guys really don't feel like main event guys. For instance, Chris Jericho, he's a special attraction. He is not a main event guy. And it just seems like I can see what he's saying. I get it. And I think this is what AEW was giving these guys a chance for, the ones that never had the chance when they were at the WWE or other promotions. And now this is really their time to shine. So a credit to them to be able to do that. But it's going to take some getting used to before we kind of all get adapted here.
So this is what you do when you start a new promotion is – you have to establish people and you have to kind of go with the wrestlers that you know. And I think that's an easy transition into Chris Jericho wins over Hangman Page. And the match was good and it was a really good main event. It was tough to follow the two previous matches with the ladder match with the Bucks and the Lucha Brothers and then Cody and Sean Spears, which we'll detail those. But Jericho had to be the first champion because he's the biggest star. And he is an attraction. But he's also an attraction that can still go on a week-to-week basis if need be. Now, they're not going to defend the title until, I think, week three of their TV show.
Yeah.
But I don't think, and I think Jericho's working a six-man, which is good to protect him the first week of TV. And I don't know if he's scheduled to be in Boston. I assume he will be in some form or fashion to set up week three. But in the case of Jericho, Jericho's your biggest star, so you have to make him the champion. I think if AEW had its way, they would have made Adam Page their first champion. But they need to tell the story of Adam Page before that they can get there. So yep. Being on a main stage in their first big stage, probably their third big stage, but Adam Page being featured in the main event of a championship match, they have to start to tell his story. He's a cowboy. Okay, he's a cowboy. He comes in riding on a horse. Okay. His family was front row at ringside, which I was sitting right behind them. And
yeah.
I was cheering for Jericho while they're cheering for their family member in Adam Page. And of course, I shriek in joy when Jericho wins and their heads are down in disappointment, which is the second time that's happened to me this year where I've been shrieking for a championship win. Of course, the first time was when Matt Taven won the Ring of Honor Championship in Madison Square Garden. I was directly behind the Lethal family, was funny because they're like really nice people.
Oh yeah, and that was a tease, I think, for the audience right there when you see Adam Page's family.
But they're going to use that to tell Adam Page's story more.
Of course.
And he'll get their world championship eventually. It's not his time yet.
No, not yet.
And they need to use Chris Jericho to make sure that they get as many eyes on them as possible.
Well, let me tell you this, Jimmy, and I think it's more of a compliment and an accomplishment to Adam Page on two levels. One, if he is going up against Chris Jericho in the first ever inaugural championship match. And then two, if he's the first one to beat Chris Jericho to become the champion after him.
So I don't think that will happen, but I certainly won't dismiss it as a possibility.
Whoever beats him first is a huge compliment.
Oh, of course it is. Of course it is. But what I'll kind of say is, I think Kenny Omega ultimately should be the first guy to beat Jericho for the title, and then that's when Jericho goes away. Or Jericho is out of the main event title picture aside from the rematch.
Right, right. Or maybe just Jon Moxley goes right after him when he's healthy.
Well, and Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley, I think, is going to be at their next pay-per-view in November. But we'll see about that. That's all early conjecture. But what I liked about this match was how the Judas Effect, Jericho's finisher, kind of came out of nowhere.
Yep.
And the setup to get into it was the code breaker, a close count of two. Page hit his finisher. That reverse tombstone only got a two count, which people were surprised. And Jericho won. And one of the things I really loved was Jericho doing the old school fighting outside the ring, takes the ring bell, taunting Page in front of his family. That's just good. That's just good stuff.
You know, badass.
It's a good way to kind of kick off their main event division, and this is kind of what we have to expect, is a slow build towards a really good, strong finish to a match.
Yep.
Let's circle back to your friend's point about the main eventers.
Yeah, think about that.
I am learning about this roster as I think a lot of people are.
Yep.
So with any new promotion, that's what you're going to have to figure out, who can go and who can't go, who's really good promos, who's really good in the ring, and all that stuff. This is all new. We live in an on-demand generation, and I guess the more recent example that I can set is ECW started out in like 92, 93.
Yeah.
And they didn't really pick up their steam as a real promotion with quote-unquote main event guys until like 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with Terry Funk. That's with this. That's with, you know, people who have some appeal from a different company or another. And Ring of Honor was kind of in a similar point where they were from scratch company, and they ended up developing CM Punk, Samoa Joe, Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson when he worked there, amongst others. And yep. Ring of Honor is still around, and they're still producing people. Recently, Kevin Steen, Kevin Owens, Tyler Black, who is Seth Rollins. And you progress through the company like that. But from scratch, Jericho's the name. Cody is a name. And by the way, Cody won the poll that I put up on Twitter.
I told you. What did I say last week?
Yeah, I disagreed with you. It's okay. We disagree. We should do it more.
I know. But the majority, though, people think it's Cody.
I like how Cody is searching his own name on Twitter. I like that.
He did. Yes, he did. And Cody, if you're listening, thank you for clicking like on my tweet. I appreciate that.
I know you do. I'm going to say that I liked the Paige Jericho match. I think it's a good start. I like that Jericho got the championship. I like the idea that Paige is going to chase for it after it for a little bit. But my match of the night, Mike, was Cody versus Sean Spears.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
why is that?
I got lost in the smoke and mirrors of the live crowd.
Okay.
I was into the story that they told from the entrances all the way to the end.
Yep.
Do I care any more about Sean Spears, the performer, after this match? No. But yep. Tully Blanchard was amazing in this matchup.
Yep.
It's like he has been waiting for years and years and years and years to get back on TV in a meaningful match, and he just pulled out all the stops trying to help his guy win.
Now, were you watching Tully more than the in-ring action? Or
I found
what?
Myself watching what Tully was doing.
Wow.
Trying to keep it. You know, I have my left eye is my decent eye and my right eye is my bad eye. So okay. I was keeping my left eye on Tully and keeping my right eye on the in-ring action.
That's pretty
but
awesome.
There are two favorite spots from Tully. Mm-hmm. One for me was the Sean Spears took the weight belt off.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
And yep. Earl Hebner's like, no, you can't use it. You can't use it. I'll DQ you.
Mm-hmm.
You can see plain as day that Tully is about to hand him his belt, his pants belt.
Right.
I don't know if TV caught it. I saw it clear as day. It was right in my line of sight.
There was a little cut briefly, but yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then he was kind of signaling over to Tully, okay, let's go.
So as soon as Earl was distracted getting rid of the weight belt,
right,
Sean Spears just whooped Cody. And there was no disqualification, even though Earl threatened to DQ him. And then Cody hulked up. And we in the crowd, we went nuts.
Wow.
Like, I went nuts for Cody's comeback there. And then Tully and MJF got into the ring and started choking each other until Spears took him out. And then when Tully started stomping MJF on the floor, Arn Anderson came to the ring. And the crowd went to the next level of banana.
That was a big pop.
And squared up spine buster. Tully Blanchard's plans seemingly had been foiled. Cody teased the chair shot. Cody spiked Spears with a crossroads. Just, I thought it had everything in it. It wasn't as catch as catch can, but it had emotion. It had story. It had really everything that you're looking for in a pro wrestling match. And just to back up a little bit, I like the beginning where Cody got into the ring. He saw Spears on the outside and he dove after him because that's how bad he wanted to get his hands on Sean Spears.
Well, even before that, too, I really do not like this Star Trek theme. I mean, it's cool you have Diamond Dallas Page there and, you know, Brandy out there, but his dog is coming out and the costumes, the whole gimmick. I'm not a fan of it. Not a fan. I think it's stupid. Just be yourself. You don't have to keep changing your gimmick every 2 years or whatnot, or I don't know, maybe they're just trying to reestablish something new with the AEW. I don't like the Star Trek one. Not a fan of it. Out on that.
So I didn't like the Star Trek entrance, and I didn't like the fact that they were doing pyro with Pharaoh there.
Yeah.
You know, dogs have sensitive hearing.
Sure.
You know, you don't want to take your child to a loud sporting event. You don't want to take your child to the fireworks unless they have like noise canceling headphones or something like that, because they're going to be extra sensitive to it.
So Jimmy's working for PETA now. Now we know why.
Well, the Cody tweeting while he's on an airplane and Pharaoh is all of a sudden a special needs dog, which I don't know where that came from. I don't, but that's a whole story for another time.
Right.
But I did like this match. Just the details of Tully trying to, quote unquote, wrestle as a manager was excellent and do whatever it takes to help Sean Spears win. Arn Anderson coming in late in the match and helps Cody. Nice touch, nice swerve. And AEW in this match really did everything right to present Sean Spears as a threat to Cody. But I still don't believe in Sean Spears.
And I don't believe in him being a heel, a major heel now. You know what I mean? I think because of Cody winning there, just kind of not squashing him, but it does not help Sean Spears' case for being at that main event level. So I don't see him there anytime soon in the major category. Maybe down the line he's going to earn his stripes a little more, but you know what? Good for him having that test right there on the biggest pay-per-view before you go weekly TV.
I still see Ty Dillinger.
Yeah.
That's who I keep seeing, and that's years and years of conditioning, and that's on me.
Yeah, no, then that's fair. And you know what? It's probably going to be like that for a lot of the guys that were in different promotions for a while. I mean, the only one I can really turn my head away from the whole character right now is Jon Moxley. I can do that. I'm able to do that when he was out there and so forth. But everything else, so it's like even, you know, Pac, Neville. I'm like, that's Neville right there, you know, which is a good match, but it's going to take time.
But I didn't believe in him beating Kenny Omega like he did.
And that was a surprise.
I thought initially it was a tap out that I just didn't see, but it was a ref stoppage because Omega passed out, and I didn't like that. But you're in a situation where, and we had mentioned this last week, where I was guessing that to get Pac to do the match, he was beating Kenny Omega.
Yeah.
And that'll set up another match for Hangman Page and Pac, and maybe we'll kind of go from there. But wins and losses matter, and Kenny Omega on pay-per-view is 0-2.
Yeah,
because he lost to Jericho. So maybe the story with Kenny Omega is going to be, is he taking on too much responsibility as a vice president? Has he lost focus as a competitor now that he's on the U.S. stage? That, and the other thing. I think that's an easy story to kind of get behind.
Yeah.
Or he's a vice president. He's like, you know what? I don't need to win. I'm good. I can win when I need to win.
Yeah.
One last note on the Cody match was the involvement of MJF.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like MJF as a character. The fact that he's rooting on, as the example that I'll use, and we all think that MJF is going to turn on Cody at some point, and they even teased it at the end of this
match. Oh, yeah.
As Cody's exiting the stage area, MJF is flipping off the entire Chicago crowd.
Oh, wow.
Behind Cody's back. So he's doing all these little things behind Cody's back to be like, I'm still a bad guy, but I love Cody. So it's an interesting dynamic. You know, more recently, it was for MJF to do StarCast, he had to apologize to Conrad, who runs StarCast, and Cody was the bridge between them. As soon as Cody leaves the room, he just runs down Conrad and is like, ha, 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 I fooled you. And now I'm doing StarCast. And we'll talk a little bit about StarCast, because there was some fun, there was some interesting stuff that came from that.
And I got to ask you too, Jimmy, you know, the arena in Chicago is a great wrestling city from what I'm told. I've never been there. You know, I think you've been there before this one, but the crowd seemed really into it, excited. big pops. I thought even the opener too, the SCU open with Jurassic Express, a really good pop there for that one. Really setting the tone for the whole show. Did you feel as though that you had that excitement the whole time there from start to finish? And, you know, being in the crowd, is there a sense of positivity and kind of like, you know, real excitement for the future of AEW here from everyone?
So let me go down your list of questions.
Yes.
But I'll start with this one. Yep. Jungle Boy is going to be a star.
He's awesome.
He looks the part. He's young. He's enthusiastic. This kid's got star written all over him. He needs the time to develop and us to learn his story.
Mm-hmm.
You were in New York for NXT. You were at that NXT Brooklyn show, correct?
Correct, yeah.
What did you think of the atmosphere there?
I thought it was hot.
Okay.
It was a hot crowd.
So that's how I would relate it to you, is it was similar positive energy from people who wanted to be there at a wrestling show, who were generally interested in helping a brand get better.
Okay.
And the example that I'll use is the women's match.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who these women are.
No.
I can Google search them and tell you one person's resume on Wikipedia and the other person's resume on Wikipedia.
Right.
The crowd sat there politely, got involved in the match once it got, but I knew one thing going.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
In that they were going to beat the crap out of each other. I knew they were going to beat each other up because that's what they do. These the international wrestlers seem to have a more hard-hitting style.
Yep.
So with these two women, the crowd was polite. I don't think that they knew everything. I certainly didn't.
Right.
But they knew when something was impactful and they were there for the near falls. So you had a crowd that wasn't dinking around on their phone trying to rip everything that was happening on Twitter. They were there enjoying the show as it was being presented to them. And the electricity was awesome.
Nice.
They did everything right for Cody and Sean Spears. You know, of course, after Cody wins, he has to do the Cody must pose thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because that's what he does.
No, that's his style. That's, we know that.
He has to do Cody must pose.
Yeah.
Transitioning a little bit, actually, we'll get there because I want to finish answering your question. I felt like that crowd was into everything because it was a traveling crowd, much like the NXT WrestleMania crowd is.
Got it.
So they're going there. They're going there to be entertained. They're there because they want to be there.
Vacation.
And that's kind of what I thought. That's kind of what I thought it was. And
okay,
even if they weren't sure of something, they have the basic knowledge of wrestling to understand, like, this is where we're going with it.
And they know who, you know, majority of the characters are, background, the whole nine yards.
That crowd was way more in. I mean, that was eye opening for me. And I kind of knew that I had to do some digging on the roster. Now I know I have to do a lot of digging on the roster.
Right. Okay.
So but there's so much wrestling.
Yeah, there's a lot right now. It's an overload. There's a lot. I didn't think the show was going to be 4 hours too, by the way.
Yeah, I think that they're doing quarterly pay-per-views, and they're going to be 4 hours.
Wow. Gosh. Yeah, I thought it was going to be three, but it is what it is.
I felt the same way because there was at one point, I think there was an hour, so my time zones are a little messed up.
Yep.
But in my mind, how are they going to do three matches in an hour?
Right. Yeah.
And obviously they didn't. They bridged everything out over 2 hours, and it was or 90 minutes or whatever the timing was, but it was good stuff.
Yep.
I mean, the Bucks and the Lucha. Did I answer all your questions, Mike?
Yeah, that's pretty
satisfactory answers for you
and for the people too. So as long as we all know the crowd, yes, the atmosphere, perfect, Jimmy, excellent. More to come.
All right.
Good. So
I'm tired. My voice is hanging in there.
Listen,
my right ear kind of works.
No, and you know what? And the venue seemed really, you know, it's not where the Chicago Bulls or the Blackhawks play. It was the, it's just outside the city, right?
Yeah. It's, I mean, I drove by the Allstate Arena out of the airport, which is the old Rosemont Horizon. So it's probably about 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, something like that.
Okay. So yeah, it's, and it looked like a smaller venue, but those are the best kinds for wrestling.
10,000. 10,000 ish.
That's perfect. Perfect. It's all you need.
But it's also it's a smaller venue and people want to be there. We went to the Evolve show a few weeks ago, and it was all people who just they wanted to be there and they were into everything and they knew, you know, as much as they were going to know.
Right. That's all you need. Tell the story.
So speaking of crowd reactions, one of the things that struck me was during the Bucks and the Lucha Brothers, which great
match of the night for me.
Ladder match. Just fabulous stuff. And the Lucha Brothers retained their tag titles, and LAX showed up, which just adds to the dynamic of that tag team division, was great.
Yep.
But the crowd reaction, this one shocked me. The crowd booed when Matt Jackson unmasked Pentagon, which I wasn't expecting the crowd to react like that. But that is a really, really smart crowd. And this is the second time that Pentagon's been unmasked in about a month. Northeast Wrestling had John Moxley against Pentagon, and the finish was Moxley unmasking Pentagon and then hitting his Death Rider DDT for the win.
Wow.
So when he unmasked him, I'm like, oh, they're winning the belts off of the unmasking. And then the crowd booed, and they sequenced later into just a stuffed pile driver, a coup de grace. They call it Fear Zone.
Yeah, then they had the crossface combo.
Zero Fear, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But then, right.
But
yeah,
that pile driver on the outside, on the ladder that was bridged between the apron and the guardrail was insane. Notwithstanding the Canadian Destroyer from the top of the ladder through the table.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty damn amazing. Yeah. Yeah, and then, like you said, when the unmasking of Pentagon, you know, with the mask of JFK and Bill Clinton out there, people knew. The crowd knew it. So, and for other people that may not have known, you had to maybe Google it real quick, or the commentators told you shortly after. So maybe initial reaction for those that didn't know right away, they were told not too long after by the commentary team as to who they were.
I saw on social media that commentating was an issue.
I thought, you know what, I have a problem right now very early on with this three-man team. And, my main problem, you know who Jim Ross is. You know what his voice sounds like. You know how he's going to talk. He's got the thick accent. Great. And he's awesome. He's the best of all time. The other two guys, Excalibur in the Mask and Golden Boy, I had a hard time determining who was who. Their voices sound very similar. And it's almost like a theater of the mind thing with radio, because on the play-by-play, you don't see their face all the time. You just don't. You see it at the beginning. And also, I really felt like, you know, in baseball, Jimmy, for radio play-by-play, say you're doing the innings 1, 4, and 7, and I'm doing 2, 3, 5, 8, 9. That's what it felt like. It felt like Jim Ross was doing one match, and then Excalibur was doing the other one. I want consistency for one play-by-play voice. If you're going to have two play-by-play voices there, then you need to do it. Have Excalibur be your play-by-play guy for television, Jim Ross your play-by-play guy for pay-per-view, one or the other. Keep it consistent. It was very hard to keep track of. I thought the chemistry was nothing special. But again, determining who was who, that was a major problem for me.
Well, and I wonder if this is where Tony Schiavone eventually comes in.
I'd hope so.
Because I think he's going to be doing more producing than actually on-air stuff. He might be like a backstage interviewer or something like that, occasionally do play-by-play. Yep. But I think his role is going to be as to help out the production staff and do kind of like his role with WWF for Coliseum Video. step in, yep. do play-by-play once in a while, do all these extras backstage and kind of go from there. But Tony can do anything. But
yeah,
to your point about the different voices, that's so important. You know, using the Felger and Naz show as the example, all five of us, Billy Lanny, myself, Tony Maz, Mike Felger, Jim Murray, we all have distinctive voices.
And you know who's who exactly. You don't have to be like, oh, is that him or is that him? Right. We know who's who.
Exactly.
Yeah. And for a promotion like this, that's a problem.
Yeah, and you knew the difference between Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler very distinctly.
Exactly, because they each had their own specific role. You have two play-by-play guys here, and I don't know which one is which.
Let's see. What else do I have from my notes? Jungle Boy, Omega. Oh, production-related, while we're on production. Yeah. The wrestlers need to learn to work the hard camera more. And so I was sitting on the hard camera side,
right?
And I noticed that wrestlers had their back to me a lot. So like Kenny Omega does his shotgun pose, and it was to the crowd, not to the camera.
Oh, boy.
Which he could do both, but he's got to do the hard camera. He's got to make sure that the people who are watching on TV see him do what his thing is doing. That's Bobby Heenan once told Scott Hall with the toothpick thing. Hey, when you throw your toothpick, throw it at the camera. Throw it at the audience.
Exactly.
Because those are the people who you want to come to the building because you've already got the people in the building.
Like, right.
Definitely acknowledge the crowd, but you also have to make sure that you acknowledge your television audience.
Yeah, exactly.
Low production detail there.
No, but you have to, though. I mean, otherwise, you're not going to know the specific trademark form there or any sort of characteristic thing like that. So that's a huge thing. Huge.
And one thing, too, is facial expressions. Mm-hmm. Facial expressions help sell products. If you're somebody who's looking for, I mean, I don't know if we have anybody who's going to be training to be, well, maybe. I don't know. I was going to say, watch how, use Charlotte as an example. Watch how her facial expressions are during the matches. She's emotionally invested in the progression of the match and things like that.
Right.
So that's just something that I think that's all about selling too, which I've talked to a number of performers about the art of selling and how it's a lost art and this, that, and the other thing. Just
absolutely.
Do you have any other notes from AEW?
Well, I'll tell you, Jimmy. Yeah, no, I just, I thought.
Yeah, no. Okay. Moving on. No.
No, like I said, I thought the match of the night was the Lucha Brothers and the Young Bucks, the Cody Shawn Spears one. I know you said that was your favorite match, or you thought it was a match of the night. Really good for what Pac did on the short notice there against Omega. They had a great performance. You know, again, as you discussed about the women, they have to find a real way to connect with the audience there and you know, tell us who they are. More or less, don't be afraid to get on the microphone and say, I'm so-and-so. You have to do that. I know the commentators are doing it on the TV, but keep doing it on the microphone just so you get it stuck in your head as to who they are. We don't know these individuals. You have to brand it. So that's a lot to work on there. But overall, I thought it was a good show. Selfishly enough, I wish the show were Sunday of Labor Day, not the Saturday, but the Sunday one. I think the sports world, we had a lot going on with college football on Saturday, and people have Monday off. Way to capitalize before the NFL starts, but that's the way they went. And overall, I'm looking forward to the weekly production of TV for AEW here on out.
I like the Saturday pay-per-view.
No, I'm really fine with it, but not this weekend, though. Not this weekend, go Sunday.
Well, so Labor Day in Chicago is going to be a yearly thing, according to Tony Khan.
That's cool. I like that. I think that's great. But make it Sunday, Tony. Make it a Sunday.
I don't think so, because I think they're gonna run the sequence of events until it runs out of steam, and that's StarCast Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, pay-per-view on Saturday night. That's if there is another StarCast. We'll see about that.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I and we'll get into, because I lived StarCast for 2 days, and that was Conrad and everybody associated with StarCast was awesome. They couldn't have been nicer.
Oh, no. They're,
but the question is what's Conrad's big attraction for the next StarCast?
Right. And that's, well, where's it going to be?
Well, that's the other question. Because they announced a pay-per-view, and I don't think they announced a location.
No, Baltimore.
Oh, they did announce Baltimore. Okay, I missed that.
Yeah, Baltimore. That's in there, yeah. Yeah.
Yep, Baltimore, Maryland. Something called the Royal Farms Arena.
Yeah, it's the old, whatever the heck it is there, Mariner Center, I believe.
Okay.
Right there.
Baltimore Civic Center. Yep,
that's it,
First
exactly.
Mariner
yep.
Center. Okay.
That's, yep, right there. Downtown. It's actually a really good wrestling venue. Really good wrestling venue. So it's been around for a while, and you know Baltimore has a pretty good wrestling city. It's not bad.
They hosted the Great American Bash for many, many years.
Yeah. Yep.
Baltimore is a city. This building, I'm not sure. I'd have to look into the details of it, but off the top of my head and my time lag, and I'm just making so many different excuses for why I'm not on my A game right now.
How you doing? Fine.
But emotionally, I just wanted to do the show.
It's great.
Adrenaline. It's also adrenaline, Mike. Adrenaline.
No, it's also the home of where Bruno Sammartino lost the heavyweight title to superstar Billy Graham, looking at it right now. So just a wrestling tidbit there for you. And WWE has been there many times. Backlash 2008, Triple H beat Randy Orton to win the championship. That was the last big pay-per-view there, I believe, for WWE. Actually, they've had a couple others. I mean, I take that back. But that was the big one that they had highlighted right there. So
CM Punk did StarCast.
Yeah,
and
now
it's the first time he's done a related wrestling event in many, many years.
So my question before you go on here,
sure.
How long did it take for someone to ask him, "Are you coming back?"
That was kind of a common theme amongst the meet and greet people.
Okay.
And he kind of addressed it. He said it's let me scroll down here because I actually made note of this.
Yep.
His general answer was this is great. Just, you know, looking through my notes.
Oh, good.
But he said something along the lines of asking when somebody Punk said the people who ask him where he's going, what he's going to do is flattering. And being asked when are you coming back is a lot better than when are you going the F away.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
So there's build for it. And if somebody, I still think if somebody ponies up the money and the story for him, they can get them. But, you know, one of the things in my notes was he said he didn't miss wrestling.
Yeah.
He didn't wish he did anything differently.
Right.
He's out of the loop on the current landscape of the product.
Right.
He hopes his work holds up.
Mm-hmm.
He noted that he needed to leave because he wasn't healthy or okay physically or mentally.
Yep.
He was shocked and speechless when he heard WWE wrestlers get vacations.
Wow. Yeah.
He likes the fact that life after wrestling, he can sleep in and has days off and sleeps in the same bed.
Yep. Not going city to city.
What else was this? He never addressed the Fox WWE reports.
Was he asked about it?
Yeah. So Mike Johnson, a PW Insider, was the one who was the moderator.
Yep.
He was the one hosting it. And I think they have a relationship from when Punk was in Ring of Honor, because that was Philadelphia based Punk was there. So it made sense. A journalist that he trusts. And Mike Johnson is a real journalist. He's a good, I had a nice interaction with him because I've been a subscriber to PW Insider for a lot of years. Mike, you might remember, was on Toucher and Rich about a year ago talking about Rob Gronkowski. Recommended that to Toucher and Rich to get this guy on because I feel like he's one of wrestling's good journalists as opposed to, you know, a gossip guy, which I love gossip people because I'm one of them.
Yeah, that's what we do.
We also
do report. We report facts.
Yeah, but I don't like being called a reporter because I'm not a reporter. I'm a rumor and innuendo guy.
Commentator. Yeah, there you go.
He said he didn't miss wrestling because he did it all. Doesn't wish he did anything differently. Out of the loop. I said that. I hate when I do that.
How long did he talk for?
It felt like about 2 hours. But it might have been like 90 minutes.
No kidding.
Because he was supposed to hit his meet and greet at 1:30, and he didn't hit it until 2:30. And the panel started, I think it was just after noontime.
Okay.
The lines to get in. So if you had a platinum bracelet for access to these stage shows, there was one line that was all the way down the length of the hotel.
Wow.
If you had a general admission, that line ran parallel to it. So it's like one of these big convention rooms that they did the stage setup and they turned people away. I think all the platinum people got in who weren't in line for the meet and greet, which, by the way, was also the length of the hotel lobby and all the way down the hall to all the different events.
My God.
Yeah. And Punk, for the meet and greet stuff, he was nice to everybody. I talked hockey with him for a few minutes.
Nice.
Just because I know he's a huge Blackhawks fan. And
sure.
I know he wanted to be. I was unfortunately at the Blackhawks winning the cup in Boston. He was not. Yeah.
Game six.
Back to work. He didn't have a dog.
It was also a Monday night.
It was a Monday night, and he wanted to be in Boston. In fact, he should have been in Boston for when the Hawks won the cup.
Yeah,
because that was his summer vacation.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have a dog in the fight in the Bruins Blues thing.
Really?
Yeah, he wasn't. He wasn't on one side or another.
All right, that's fair. Okay.
It's weird. I feel like he has this anti-Boston thing, and Boston's been nothing but good to him.
You know, maybe it's just the he's jumping on the bandwagon of everyone else in the country to go against success. You know what I mean? That's, yeah. But interesting. Yeah, that's the sense you got from it, though, huh?
Yeah. Totally. I mean, one of my favorite photos, which I had him sign, and it's a photo that I took from Night of Champions, Clash of Champions. It was him and John Cena, and they did a wonky double pin finish, but he came out in Yankee pinstripe gear, and it's some of my favorite gear, and it was great. It was just awesome.
Yep.
Nice. So I have the photo. I took a photo of him standing over Cena holding up the spinner belt, and I had him autograph that for me. And
when the shoulders were down, remember?
There was another item that he autographed for me, but we'll talk about that later.
Oh, cool.
Let's see what else from my notes.
So Punk went on. He spoke for about an hour.
He spoke for 90 minutes to 2 hours.
That's good. Good.
There was a Tony Atlas story that he told. He loves Harley Race. Oh, here's something. Punk at one point went up to Steve Austin 2010 and asked him to give him a stunner to end a San Diego show.
Really?
And I guess nobody ever asked Austin to do that.
Yeah.
The locker room was shocked that Punk was willing to do it. Steve Austin was really happy to be asked to do it. Mm-hmm. And Punk at some point that year thought that there was a match with Steve Austin that was going to happen. And it just kind of faded into the dust. People might remember that they did a 2K video. And if you can find it on YouTube, they're talking up a match. They're doing promos against each other. And it feels like there's a match coming.
Nice.
But it ultimately never happened.
Okay. Got it. That's pretty cool.
But CM Punk is a great talker.
Yeah.
And he should be a commentator somewhere full time if he's not going to be a wrestler.
Well, yeah.
But I get the feeling, I get the vibe just from hearing him talk and talking to people who interacted with him, my interaction with him. I think if he just is making movies.
Yeah.
And doing this event here and there, I think he's good.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he said at one point, I don't remember if this was, I think he's over the fact that he didn't get his WrestleMania main event.
Okay.
I think he feels like he accomplished everything that he could.
Right.
And he's happy with his body of work. That's a vibe that I got. I don't know if those were exactly his words, but that was kind of a vibe that I got.
Well, you know, and to his credit, too, he has made himself a very intriguing individual because, you know, we know the whole backstory of how he departed the WWE and then has been kind of quiet. Definitely hasn't fought since. So that is a very mysterious thing as to what's going to happen here. And he's made himself a draw, like you said. I mean, that show must have, that Q&A session must have sold out within a matter of moments, right?
So the Q&A was about, like, first come, first serve.
Oh, what?
And that's why the lines ran parallel for the people who were the VIPs and the people who weren't the VIPs. I don't know how many of the non-VIPs actually got in.
Wow.
But crazy. There was, I know Conrad was expecting a big walk-up crowd. And I think they got a big walk-up crowd, not only for the meet and greets, but also for the panel discussion.
Wow!
But one thing that I can say is CM Punk took as much time as you wanted with those meet and greets. I watched it firsthand. If you wanted to go up there, get a picture, and just say thank you and walk off, that was it. Yeah. He was fine with that.
Wow.
But if you wanted to talk to him for 2 minutes.
Yeah,
he talked to you for 2 minutes.
That's really cool. I respect that.
He couldn't have been more gracious with his time with me.
Yeah.
And I saw him do the same thing with a number of other people.
Well, I respect that. That's
I'm a CM Punk guy anyway, but to see that, and I know some people question whether it's authentic or not.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly remember that they're all carnies.
Yeah.
But I want to take that as he's being authentic and he cares about his fans, and that's what I want to believe.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And the fact that he's doing that, taking the time to do, whether it be a minute or two or whatnot, to, be there for the fan and give the fan the specific amount of time, that says a lot. I respect that. That's great.
So other things from StarCast. MJF. Guy's hilarious.
MJF?
His insults are amazing. He's such an entertaining villain. The highlight that I saw and was actually documented by many on Twitter. It's funny how people say that they were at Roger Clemens' 20 strikeout game.
Yeah.
Everybody was at that game, apparently, if you were alive at the time, when there were only like 10,000 people at Fenway, because
it was
Larry Bird was doing the duel with Dominique at the Boston Garden that night during the playoffs. Right. So you're lying.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So
that's kind of like the old school with Ted Williams. I was at his last game, and the same deal, in the home run, and there's only like 40 people there at Fenway.
Yep. So MJF said to a kid in a wheelchair, quote, "Clearly I'm doing better than you. Look what I can do," unquote, and stood up and danced.
Wow.
And everybody,
what did everyone say to that?
Everybody was like, ooh, and then they laughed because it's MJF.
Yeah. And I'm sure the kid had a laugh, too.
Oh, I'm sure, because we're all in on the joke. We're all entertained by it. There was somebody who approached him, and MJF took the gum out of his mouth, put it on the kid's head, and said, "Take the picture."
Good God.
So in my case, I went up to him and said, "Hey, thanks for doing this." And he's like, "Yeah, go F yourself." And I go, I remember seeing you in middle of nowhere, Connecticut, working a town hall in front of people who didn't care about you. He's like, "Yeah, so what? I'm still better than you." And I go, "Yeah, that's true." And I said, "By the way, you can make that 8x10 out to James." And so I thought he wrote F face on it at first, but he actually wrote jerk face on it.
So he was all character, huh?
Oh yeah, he was fabulous. He did a lot of good stuff. It was tremendous.
Good for him. That's awesome.
Penelope Ford.
Oh yeah, you were looking forward to meeting her.
I was really looking forward to, she is my third. She was my third favorite female wrestler. Now she's my second.
Really?
Who's
number one, Jimmy? Who's number one?
Woo.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, we wanted to make that clear for everybody.
Charlotte Flair is number one. That's all.
Yeah,
Tessa Blanchard was second, but I haven't seen Tessa in years, so forget her. Even though she sent me a nice package of her T-shirt and 8x10 that isn't appropriate for certain walls.
Nice payday for her.
It is a nice payday.
So
Penelope Ford is my third favorite female. Is now my second favorite female wrestler. I've been following her work for Beyond Wrestling and for Northeast, and now she's in AEW. I think she's only part-time right now, but hopefully that'll become a full-time gig for her. But she's got a good look. Athletically, she can do anything in the ring. She's willing to do anything in the ring. Mm-hmm. She to me has franchise star written on her in some form or fashion. It's going to take a little time for her to get there. And she got a showcase spot in the Battle Royal on the pre-show.
Mm-hmm.
So,
good for her.
Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard.
Did you? Oh, you met them too.
I met them too. I had a nice conversation with them.
And just real quick to preface this for everyone, I think the majority of listeners here have been to a WrestleCon. Is this similar to the StarCast? Similar to WrestleCon?
Yep.
Okay.
Similar.
There you go.
So Arn and Tully. My earliest memory of them is them beating Demolition in Worcester, Massachusetts for the tag team titles.
I saw your tweet on this. I love it.
And I said to Arn and Tully, I always introduce myself. Hi, my name is James. It's nice to meet you. Thank you for doing these things. And I told him that my earliest memory. And I said, I was 8 years old, and I booed you both for beating Demolition. And Arn looks at me, smiles, and says, good, you should have.
I love it.
And
that's
so
awesome.
Tully Blanchard laughs and says, how did you like the chair shot on Demolition Smash? And I kind of grimaced and I said, yeah, I've heard stories about this. And so he recounts how Barry Darso Smash is still angry about it. Some, you know, that was 1989 and it's 2019.
Yep.
And he said, if you ever see Barry Darso, ask him about it and let me know how that goes.
Nice. I love it.
And Arn Anderson has a podcast coming up soon, by the way.
Him and
Conrad are going to do a podcast starting in September, which we're now in September.
Pretty interesting.
Let's see. Other things from my notes.
Who wouldn't want to do a podcast with Conrad?
I mean, Arn's already got an AEW contract, but.
Yeah, but still, I mean, great exposure.
But everybody he's done a podcast with seems to get signed up by a wrestling company. So
turns to gold.
He's done something right. Don West.
Oh, the card guy?
If you remember the guy who used to be on Home Shopping Club, right? Home Shopping Network, Home Shopping Club.
Yeah.
QVC, one of those things.
Sure, yeah.
He would sell you baseball cards late at night.
Yep.
Tremendous energy. He was a color analyst for TNA with Mike Tenay for a long time. Really hyped. I watched him work the gimmick table in the front lobby like it was nobody's business.
Wow.
What a salesman.
He was
talking to the particular example that I saw. There was a Four Horsemen frame that was probably 24 by 30 piece. Really nice piece. Nice artwork autographed by Arn and Tully. Might have had more on it, but I only saw Arn and Tully.
Yep.
So he's talking it up, and the guy's like, yeah, I think I'm going to get it, but I'm not sure. I'm kind of on the fence.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, I'll keep it to the side. I won't let anybody else touch it until I talk to you first. You know, this, that, and the other thing. You know, it's this price, but I'll give it to you for this price if you want to close it now.
Yeah,
and it was a joy to watch. Other example.
Guy's a wheeler and a dealer.
The other example was. They had these little, not 8x10s, more like 5x7. It's an autographed photo of like Eric Bischoff, Booker T, Sting, Tony Schiavone, Arn Anderson. There might have been one more. And a little piece of the Nitro ring cap canvas. It's a really nice, quick piece.
That's cool. Yeah.
And I don't know how much they were, but there was somebody who was looking at them, and he's like, you know, those ones there are selling really well. So that is going to cost you full price. But these ones over here, we're not doing so well with these. So if you're interested in like two or three of these, we'll cut you a deal.
Was it, did it end up being a sellout?
Oh, no. They were there when I left on Saturday. No, today's Saturday.
No, today's Sunday.
Today's Sunday. I left there on Saturday, they were still packing up stuff to try and sell tomorrow. Sorry, my days are all.
So this guy's cut a deal. I respect that. Good for him. And he's, you know, people fall for it, whether he's telling the truth or not. And if he's able to make a buck on it, good for him.
They were wrapping up their purchases for Saturday.
Yep.
And I'm sorry. They were wrapping up their table on Saturday. And so somebody goes over and asks how much an autograph championship is. And Don says, oh, it's 7:50. And the person says, well, you're wrapping up the table, so can I make you an offer? And Don says, go ahead. And the person says, $500 for it. And Don says, you know, it's the last one that I have, and somebody else had grabbed one. If I had an extra, how about $600? And the guy, without hesitation, goes, done, and hands over his credit card.
Oh, my God. So he tried to get a deal, but he paid more for it.
Yep. Oh, no, 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 no. He saved $150 off of what the original ask price was.
Oh, my God.
Because Don West wanted to make a deal with the guy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I misunderstood you. Oh, all right. Well, not bad.
So the customer...
Do you know which belt it was?
It was a CM Punk autograph.
Oh, spinner belt?
Yes.
Nice. Nice. Authentic or replica?
If it was like the real one, there's no way that it's 750 down to $600.
Yeah.
But I mean, it looks nice. And if it's anything like the one that I got, you know, it's really nice.
You get a spinner too?
I had CM Punk autograph a spinner belt for me.
Oh, nice. Did he personalize it or what?
He did not. He personalized my photo, but that was only because I asked him to.
Okay.
So well, I didn't ask him to personalize the belt.
So here's my thing with the belts as an avid collector. I mean, I have a couple that, you know, I have some multiple signatures on there, but for that one, something like that, the spinner belt, I mean, it's your choice, Jimmy. I'd probably retire it, although maybe have John Cena sign it.
So here's the question, though, right? Yeah. Is do you, even if it's got the CM Punk nameplate on it, do you still have John Cena sign it?
Oh, no. Nope.
Yeah. See, I think if you have a nameplate on a wrestler, then another, with an exception. So say, for example, Kenny Omega signed an IWGP title with Okada's name on it.
Yeah. See,
like, I like that. I like you mean, that. I think you mean that's cool.
You mean the nameplate?
The nameplate, yeah.
Yeah. See, I don't know. I mean, it shows that they had a matchup. But if you're really invested in that, then go ahead, be you. You know.
Yeah. See, I think that to a degree that's cool. So, for example, if John Cena's nameplate was on the CM Punk autographed spinner belt, like I would think that was cool.
Yeah.
Because it's showing a lineage.
They had they definitely had a rival.
I mean, that's CM Punk's best rival.
Yeah,
I think it is.
Without question. Yeah.
The last
good matches.
Oh, fabulous matches. Fabulous matches. You know, WWF will tell you, WWE will tell you that John Cena's greatest rival is Randy Orton. I think John Cena's greatest rival is CM Punk. If you want to tell me it's Edge, I won't fight you on it.
Yep.
But I think that's John Cena's greatest rival is CM Punk.
Yeah, CM Punk
and Edge
one.
Edge is two.
Yeah, yeah. Give me CM Punk one, and I'm with you there. Randy Orton number two, Edge 2A. He's right there.
So I want to close with somebody who I met in passing.
Mm-hmm.
There are two wrestling journalists that I met this weekend for the first time, even though I've interacted with them in past lives.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Johnson, a PW Insider, who was the moderator for the CM Punk stage show. He was really nice. I introduced myself. I've been a subscriber for a long time to PW Insider.
Yep.
He thanked me for paying his mortgage, which I smiled and said, you pay your mortgage in the same way that I didn't buy CM Punk's house.
Nice.
Which he laughed. And that, of course, is reference to the Colt Cabana CM Punk podcast.
Sure. Yep.
The other wrestling journalist I met was Dave Meltzer.
Mm-hmm.
He was walking around the gimmick tables. And I said, hi, I'm James. I'm a longtime subscriber. Would you mind taking a photo? Which he said, yeah, sure. He took the photo. And I said, you know, keep up the good work. And he said,
trying to be nice.
Thank you for subscribing, and couldn't get away from me quick enough.
Wow.
He was very short,
mm-hmm.
Both in conversation and in stature. But you want to talk about somebody who is muscled up. I mean, Meltzer's muscled.
Is he really? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's in pretty good shape.
I mean, I don't know if he could. I don't know. I shouldn't say that. But he was very short, very quick. Didn't seem like he wanted to actually socialize with somebody. So FDM.
You know what? Someone called Bruce Pritchard right now. He would kiss you as we speak.
I should reach out to Bruce about that, actually.
Yeah, he would love that. He'd love that.
And I think that's my weekend in Chicago.
Yeah, no, Jimmy, it sounds like a good one. And, you know, from good for you to be able to go out there. That's a great opportunity for you. I probably would have joined you if I didn't have to do the New England Revolution PA announcing, shameless plug. But next year, though, if it is still going to be Labor Day weekend, like you were saying, if all the plans are intact there, that would be the weekend after SummerSlam in Boston. So, you know, there's something to consider. There are two wrestling weekends in a row. A nice little getaway, I think, after the SummerSlam one.
I don't think I'll be with SummerSlam being in Boston, Mike. And
yeah.
I think I'm going to, I might actually rent out a hotel in Boston so I can just walk to everything.
Just stay invested.
Just stay in Boston. Just stay focused on work and do that. Yep. But we'll see. I don't know necessarily that travel would be an option at that point for me.
I hear you. I hear you. I'm sorry. I'm just laughing about the Dave Meltzer thing. That's just what a
well. It's just interesting to me because I've been subscribers to both websites for a very long time. Mike Johnson, in my mind, is the best wrestling journalist there is. If you want to tell me it's Wade Keller with the torch,
sure,
okay. But I think Mike Johnson is just. I think he's the best.
Justin Barrazzo is my favorite.
Justin is awesome as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, Justin, of course, who works for SI, who he was my intern years ago.
Yes, you should be proud of that.
He was my intern years ago. I actually, I was kind of expecting to see him in Chicago, but he didn't make it. No. But I was hoping to, I was hoping to spend a little time with him.
Go check him out.
Justin and I are still in contact to this day, and he's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet in your life. And he is, he's the kid that. If you punched him in the face, he'd say, "Thank you. Can you do it again?" Just because he's that polite.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
Not bad. So I think that was my weekend in
good stuff, Jimmy.
Chicago. Oh, one other little detail, and this is just something to file away.
Yeah.
I think Northeast Wrestling has a working relationship with AEW. I think.
Oh,
that.
Like a little.
So if you see, AEW talent working with Northeast Wrestling, I think there's a connection there.
Similar to the New Japan.
Yeah, and I think there might be some more connections coming.
Interesting.
Yeah,
look at
that. So just something to file away. There's probably other stuff that I just am blanking on that I didn't put in my notes because this is strictly a recap thing.
Yeah. Fun show.
Yes, absolutely. So that is your AEW recap.
There you go.
Mike, do you have any other notes that anything you want to hit on?
No, I think I covered everything and turning the page here, looking forward to previewing the Night of Champions next week.
Oh, God, there's another one?
In 2 weeks, it's coming up.
Oh, my goodness.
I know, the second weekend of September, so it'll be here before you know it. Get ready. And it's funny, I'll also share with you something next week, a little teaser for you. I was talking to someone about this, about potential Royal Rumble winners. And I'm like, I can't think of that right now. Like, you know, you got to start kind of thinking about it. So I want to throw a couple things at you there next week about that.
The answer is Roman Reigns. Each week,
I was going to say Dolph Ziggler.
Really?
Yeah, I'll tell you why.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
It should be him.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.